Jake turned the knob and opened the door. Inside was only darkness and a row of gleaming brass hooks. One long-forgotten mitten lay near the stacked piles of blue books in the corner. His heart sank, and suddenly Jake felt like simply creeping into that dark room with its bitter smells of winter and chalk dust. He could move the mitten and sit in the corner under the coat hooks. He could sit on the rubber mat where you were supposed to put your boots in the wintertime. He could sit there, put his thumb in his mouth, pull his knees tight against his chest, close his eyes, and just give up. This idea, the relief of this idea, was incredibly attractive. It would be an end to the terror and confusion and dislocation. That last was somehow the worst, that persistent feeling that his whole life had turned into a funhouse mirror maze. Yet, there was deep steel in Jake Chambers, as surely as there was deep steel in Eddie and Susanna. Now it flashed out its dour blue lighthouse gleam in the darkness. There would be no giving up. Whatever was loose inside him might tear his sanity away from him in the end, but he would give it no quarter in the meantime. Be damned if he would. Never, he thought fiercely. Never! Never! When you finished your inventory of the school supplies in the cloakroom, John, perhaps you'd care to join us, Miss Avery said from behind him in her dry, cultured voice. There was a small gust of giggles as Jake turned away from the cloakroom. Miss Avery was standing behind her desk with her long fingers tented lightly on the blotter, looking at him out of her calm, intelligent face. She was wearing her blue suit today, and her hair was pulled back in its usual bun. Nathaniel Hawthorne looked over her shoulder, frowning at Jake from his place on the wall. "Sorry," Jake muttered and closed the door. He was immediately seized by a strong impulse to open it again, to double-check, to see if this time that other world with its hot sun and desert vistas was there. Instead, he walked back to his seat. Petra Jesserling looked at him with merry, dancing eyes.
"Take me in there with you next time," she whispered. "Then you'll have something to look at."
Jake smiled in a distracted way and slipped into his seat. "Thank you, John," Miss Avery said in her endlessly calm voice. "Now, before you pass in your final essays, which I am sure will all be very fine, very neat, very specific, I should like to pass out the English department's short list of recommended summer reading. I will have a word to say about several of these excellent books." As she spoke, she gave a small stack of mimeographed sheets to David Surrey. David began to hand them out, and Jake opened his folder to take a final look at what he had written on the topic, My Understanding of Truth. He was genuinely interested in this, because he could no more remember writing his final essay than he could remember studying for his French final. He looked at the title page with puzzlement and growing unease. My Understanding of Truth by John Chambers was neatly typed and centered on the sheet, and that was all right. But he had, for some reason, pasted two photographs below it. One was of a door. He thought it might be the one at number 10 Downing Street in London, and the other was of an Amtrak train. They were color shots, undoubtedly culled from some magazine. Why did I do that? And when did I do it? He turned the page and stared down at the first page of his final essay, unable to believe or understand what he was seeing. Then, as understanding began to trickle through his shock, he felt an escalating sense of horror. It had finally happened. He had finally lost enough of his mind so that other people would be able to tell.